You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to introduce Crescat Capital to you today. And to help help me do that, I've got Kevin Smith, who is the founder and chief investment officer, and Tavi Costa, who is the portfolio manager and, I guess, the macro designer of the company's macro view of the world and the market. So it's really good to have them with us. Now, I learned to know about Crescat Capital primarily because of Quentin Henning's involvement with the company as a technical advisor, because I've been just really a big fan of Quentin's for many years. I was drawn to the Crescat, to the Crescat Gets Active. It's called the Crescat Gets Activist on Gold and Silver video series, which are absolutely excellent. And if you're interested in this sector, I think it's one you're going to want to pay attention to. It's on their YouTube. It's on their YouTube channel, the Crescat's YouTube channel. As you know, Quentin has a sharp eye for talent and integrity, and he is quite selective in who he does business with. So it's not surprising that he chose to go to work with Crescat, given its stellar performance over many years. For example, one of the funds managed by Crescat is the Precious Metals Hedge Fund, which has gained 235% from its inception on August 1, 2020. Through July 31st, 2021. Now, that's pretty darn good considering the fact that we've had several months of pretty wretched, well, not wretched, but certainly not very robust markets for the junior sector. So the company was co-founded by Kevin and his wife, Linda, and Kevin is the chief investment officer, and he is joined, as I say, with Tavi Costa here with us today, who is the company's involved with the macro economic view of the company. Certainly both of them work on that as well. If you personally invest in the junior sector, I think this is really a company you want to pay attention to, Crescat, especially the Crescat Gets Activist on Gold and Silver videos. And so I really want to welcome Kevin and Tavi for joining me again today. Thanks, both of you, for joining me.
Thank you, Jay.
Yes, thanks for having us.
You bet. And yet I should mention it's crescat.net, I believe, is your website, Crescat, C-R-E-S-C-A-T.net. Kevin, I just noted that, you know, that I just mentioned that 235% gain during the first year of the existence of the Precious Metals Hedge Fund, despite some weakness in the market, as you're painfully aware. How have you managed to do so well right out of the gate?
Well, thanks. Really, thanks to the assistance of Quentin Henning, first and foremost. I mean, like you mentioned, it's basically been a flat to down market for gold and silver in that 1 year performance that we've had since we launched the fund. But we've been able to do so well because we've been focused, number one, on the exploration side of the segment of the industry where we think there's a tremendous amount of value, first of all, to initiate positions, but also a lot of value to be created as we get involved with many companies that are involved in making new discovery of gold and silver. And with Quentin helping us direct our funds in an activist sort of way so we can actually get money to these companies to actually do drilling and make discovery, we have been able to generate those returns, and primarily it came from helping companies get money to make some big new discoveries, and that those are companies like SK Mining, mm-hmm. El Oro Resources, and Newfound Gold, just three of at least a dozen of our companies that had excellent drill results in the last year, and have been creating value in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about it. And in a lot of your presentations, you talk about the Lassonde curve. It is during that discovery phase when really a lot of percentage gains are made. And then you go into the orphan period and things slow down a little, and then you get into the time frame where you know, the successful companies then probably exceed their old highs. Hopefully they do. But you're primarily engaged in that. This fund is primarily engaged in the exploration sector, which, of course, is Quentin Henning's strength. So, it's really a great model. I think you've had somebody that's as good as he is to work with. And also, you say activist, it means you are actively involved. And I think a lot of the companies pay a great deal of attention to Quentin's ideas and his ability to interact with their technical people, with the company's technical people, with their geoscientists, is really, really what makes this work, I think.
Absolutely. Quentin's expertise is really key in all of this. He's been in the industry for at least 30 years and knows a lot about discovery. And when the companies, you know, really are eager to listen to him and we can be involved in that way. Activism to us means a bunch of different things. One of them is certainly Quentin's active involvement with the companies. It's also his involvement with helping to tell the story.
Yes.
And it's our ability to put a significant chunk of capital into these companies too, whereby we can get a significant stake in what are, you know, small cap and micro cap stocks, often where we can get anywhere between 5% and up to 20% of the shares of the outstanding shares of these companies on a partially diluted basis, including the warrants that we're able to strike as part of the deals. And we get involved in PIPE deals, which are private placements in public securities. Mm-hmm. Also, some pre-IPO situations. By investing in the private placements in the public securities, we're able to often come in at a discount to the public price, and get warrants as part of the transaction. And those are just some of the extra kickers that we're able to have inside of this hedge fund strategy.
Mm-hmm. Well, for sure, and I should mention it just briefly, because I think we want to focus primarily on the gold and silver sectors and the exploration sectors. But it should be pointed out that Kevin, your firm has done very well over the years. You have a global macro hedge fund, and you have a long short hedge fund, and especially I think the long short hedge fund shows a 491% gain since May 1st, 2000, if I'm reading this correctly, and I mean, that's pretty good because I don't know how many guys have tried to, you know, go short and have, you know, have lost their shirts. I mean, it's just been a horrible thing to try to do. But I guess what you do is you move it around. I mean, it's not just short. So how do you determine when you're basically short and when you're basically long? I don't know if this is a question for either of you.
I'll let Tavi chime in since I've been doing a lot of the talking. Go ahead, Tavi.
Well, I would say that the most important part that we try to focus on is looking for pair trades and ideas that are secular moving. In this case, in today's environment where we believe we're entering a long-term inflationary setup for the markets, and you look at the investment alternatives universe of pretty much any stock or corporate bond or treasuries that actually yield less than inflation expectations, when you are in that environment, you start thinking about the flows out of very crowded investments towards something that has been out of favor, such as commodities. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we came up with this idea of really implementing the commodities to equity ratio. You know, we don't know what's going to cause this ratio to rise, if it's commodities that will outperform significantly, or it will be equity markets that will perhaps reached a reckoning moment given the valuations where we are when it comes to the business cycle and or calculations of issues and this mismatch of fundamentals and the reality of prices today. So mm-hmm. I think that matching the two opportunities is really something we've done in the past, and we enjoy having the two asymmetric bets in both sides of the portfolio. And then we add some other things, such as we have shorts in the Chinese currency, we have shorts in the Hong Kong dollar, as parts of perhaps you call it an insurance play. We don't have to necessarily be right about those, but if we are, those make up a whole performance for the year. So it's almost like a basket of very asymmetric opportunities that we find in the markets, and that is one way to be positioned.
And your global macro hedge fund has also performed well. I see 580% since January 1st, 2006. So I guess maybe, Kevin, you can tell people these are hedge funds and the entry level, because they are, you know, relatively modest as hedge funds go at different levels. Would you care to comment on that, the precious metals hedge fund, the long short hedge fund, and the global macro hedge fund?
Sure. The global macro hedge fund has been our flagship fund since we launched it really in 2006. In the last year since we launched the precious metals fund, that one has actually grown to become even larger in just 1 year, which is pretty crazy. But it's testament to the exciting things going on in that sector and in that fund. Both of those two funds, the global macro and the precious metals, have a $250,000 minimum. Mm-hmm. They are for accredited investors only. They are true hedge funds in that sense. Mm-hmm. And then our long short fund, which has an even longer track record, that was started kind of at the peak of the tech bubble in 2000. And that one has a $100,000 minimum, and that's focused just more on long short equity.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of tech bubbles, maybe Tavi, you can comment on that. I know that your letter that you sent out to your shareholders or to your investors, you did a comparison of the tech bubble in 2000 with the one we have now. Would you care to comment on that?
Sure. This comparison was actually made by Kevin, but I can certainly chime in and tell you a little bit about what the research looked like. And the question really was, you know, how much of the enterprise value of those businesses back in the tech bubble were relative to the GDP at the time. And what we found is that today we're at much more extreme levels when we look at the top companies in the tech sector. Tech companies are very profitable, but are actually less profitable on a yield basis relative to what inflation really is. Wow. We think that this issue of what security selection has looked like in the last few years with the focus on top-line improvements will perhaps shift away as cost of capital begins to rise caused by inflationary forces picking up. And therefore, we think that the higher focus on profitability and cheaper stocks and fundamental analysis and value investing principles will actually take place again. And so why we think that natural resource industries will become a bigger part of the economy as we move towards a new regime in the markets. And mm-hmm. so that's we are very concerned about the valuations in the tech sector, very concerned about valuations in the market as a whole. And we think that there is certainly a risk for a deflationary shock, believe it or not, given the fact that liquidity has so far been very large mm-hmm. coming from central banks. But certainly we are in a moment where the Federal Reserve is trapped. And so what are they going to do? There's a possibility of taking the path of least resistance, which would be the inflationary side. And so we have an inflationary a portfolio focus with the exploration names in the portfolio and the commodity-related companies with some shorts paired with it as part of that risk. And who knows the exogenous shock that could perhaps create a liquidity crash in equity markets.
Yeah, who knows? And how do you prepare for it is a bigger question. How do you, in your portfolio selection, how do you prepare for that exogenous shock that might just, you know, take the floor out from underneath the markets?
Well, I certainly have a view on what the exogenous shock could look like. I think it's coming from China. When we look at the credit imbalances in China historically, we've never seen any economy to get to the level that we've seen China with over $50 trillion in its banking assets. And so clearly we have a credit bubble that tends to implode and perhaps could potentially have issues in the global economy as well. As we know, we've had a CCP. The CCP has been cracking down on domestic companies. We've had some issues with ADR companies in the U.S. And the change in price levels of Chinese securities have certainly been linked to a lot of the macro data in the U.S., which suggests that we may see a deceleration of growth in the next months or so, and perhaps even a correction in equity markets in the U.S. And so we're very focused on that. It's one of the risks that I don't think the Federal Reserve has its hands on, and that could potentially become a much bigger problem. So there's a few buckets of shorts that we look at. We look at the very high multiple names, the high-flying names, and most of them are in the tech space, software space, and so forth. But there's quite a lot of other issues that we see with margins getting squeezed with our views about wages and salaries growing. And so we're looking for companies that don't have much of the buying power and selling power, I would say, and could perhaps get squeezed into margins issues in the following months and years. And so I think those two buckets are very important right now, and we use our quant models to select those in order to have a basket of high potential shorts here.
Yeah. Well, we just had Michael Oliver on our first segment today, and he's also getting a bit queasy about the high-tech names, the big names, the guys that have been carrying the NASDAQ and the S&P primarily on their backs for some time, and he sees also some possibilities there of a decline in an equity market decline. What about cryptocurrencies? What are your thoughts on that? I haven't really taken the time to see if you've commented on it, but either of you want to talk about cryptocurrencies? Is there any place in your world for that?
I'll let Kevin comment on it.
Yep. I'll give my comments first. The crypto world for me has always been I've been a real skeptic because I look at it as someone creating some software out of thin air, and that's going to become money all of a sudden. I mean, we like gold and silver because it has thousands of years of history as a tangible asset, as money that central banks own, that people own and trade with. However, there's some credence. And what's interesting about the crypto world, and especially the Bitcoiners, is that they've really adopted all of the same, global macro narrative of the gold bugs. That they call it Bitcoin. Their symbol is gold, and it's in limited supply, even though it's just there's an unlimited number of competing cryptocurrencies. So I think in general it's raising more awareness for the issues of fiat money and debt and the inevitable inflation and devaluation of the dollar and other fiat currencies that we're likely to experience. And if the crypto crowd wants to adopt that same narrative, that's okay. But I think it's also a big sign of the speculation that's out there in the market at large and all the money that is sloshing around that the Fed and the government has created through the fiscal and monetary stimulus. And so we really need to be careful here, especially at these insane valuations. There's a lot of speculation in the markets, and I think there's a lot of risk in crypto. And if someone has made a lot of money in crypto, we have investors that have made a lot of money in crypto, and they've been peeling it off and putting some with us. And I think, that's it's a good mix to have some traditional precious metals in your portfolio, too, if you're a crypto fan.
No doubt about it. You commented also in your latest letter about gold relative to commodities. Gold has been disappointing for those of us gold bugs compared to the commodity sector overall. Would either of you care to comment on that? Why the weakness in gold when we have all this inflation, rising inflation levels that are taking everybody by surprise?
And now that one is one of Tavi's charts, so he should definitely comment on that.
Yeah, well, I think the idea is yes, gold looks relatively cheap when you look at compared to the monetary base, money supply, equities. But even more importantly, is it looks undervalued when you look at relative to other places such as commodities as a whole. And so that's for me what it shows is that we saw it since 2018 in August, we saw an appreciation of gold all the way to August of 2020. That went up all the way to about 75%. And then since then, we've seen sort of a consolidation period. And I think that a lot of that move was signaling what we saw in regards to the fiscal and monetary disorder when it comes to central banks coming to rescue of the equity markets. Now, since then, we've seen this idea of tapering sort of becoming more popular. I think that has partially hurt gold, and on top of the issues with cryptocurrencies that have, I would say, still been getting a lot of momentum in regards to capital flows. But I think that at the end of the day, central banks buy gold. And so if we see a beginning of issues in regards to central banks needing to improve the international reserves of those countries, which I think it's going to happen, it's going to become a trend where central banks will have to start buying gold in order to improve the quality of those currencies that are backed by international reserves. I think that that's going to be one of the things that creates a demand for precious metals. So we still think that we are in a secular bull market for precious metals. We haven't seen a lot of the late cycle signs, such as the M&A cycle in the miners. We haven't seen the CapEx growth to levels that are unsustainable. We haven't seen the leverage ratios move significantly higher for the miners. So everything looks fundamentally cheap in different parts of the industry. And I think that that's a big sign of where we are today. And I think this is just a sell-off and an incredible opportunity to be looking for high-quality projects to put money to work.
Yeah, we've seen gold at the bottom in this cycle, just a bit around $1,100. It's gone up to $1,800 right about now. But I guess we haven't really seen anything like a blow-off phase that you would expect in the late part of a bull market. And you have to wonder. But it is. What about the gold shares then? Do you anticipate the gold shares should, I would think, because of the leverage factor, should outperform the bullion then at some point here?
I think when you look at where we are in the cycle for precious metals mining shares, and especially when it comes to the junior mining stocks, which is the exploration sector, you know, we've effectively been through a 10-year bear market that only retested its lows in March of 2020 with the COVID lows. And here, just in the past couple of months, we've had another smackdown. We called it blood in the streets when it was March 2020, yeah. And that was a great buying opportunity. But we kind of have another one of those blood in the streets moment here in terms of how the juniors have sold off on this idea that that inflation is transitory and that, yeah, that the Fed's getting ready to taper anyway. And we think it is just still so early in a new market because the majors have underinvested in replacing their reserves, and they're going to have to go to the juniors if they want to increase their production, even if they want to maintain their production. And it's a very bullish setup for gold and silver in general, but for the junior miners, it's an incredible setup.
Yeah, and those majors are going to look for big deposits. And we know who has this model of go big or go home, don't we?
Indeed. I think it's somebody named... No one other than Quentin Henney knows Henney. How to find big, high-grade gold deposits.
Well, he's not interested if they're not big, I think, for the most part. So now with just about a minute left or so, if either of you would want to comment on this transitory issue. I mean, it seems to me if we went into a bear market, if we went into the stock market decline, we might see some of that, or Tavi, you were mentioning any number of things that could happen, exogenous factors that could, pull the floor out from under us. But maybe real quickly, if you'd like to just comment, what are your thoughts? Is this a transitory, of course, and it's not going to go up every month, but are we in a new stage like the 1970s of much higher inflation?
I have to comment here because I really do believe, and I think Tavi shares this belief, that we are – that we're entering a stagflationary environment, not a deflationary environment. I mean, our bet is on inflation, but when you look at other stagflationary periods like the 70s and like that 73-74 bear market, we haven't seen one of those since 73-74. We kind of saw one in 01-02 when commodities started to take off and the tech bust happened, but 73-74, I mean, that was the killer. Go listen to Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger and hear them talk about those days, because it was brutal. And that's a time when large cap growth stocks can get pummeled and gold stocks and commodity stocks can take off to the upside at the same time. And so that's That's the type of market that we are in position for and that we envision. Tavi, do you have any quick comments on that?
I think you guys are about done, right? Yeah, as I can see here. So I'll let my comments for another day.
Very good. Another day. Yeah. Well, thank you both of you for being with us today. It's really great to have you. Great to introduce you to our listeners. And I hope we can have you back again sometime in the not too distant future. So thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Jay.
All right, folks, so that is it for today. Next week, Dr. Quentin Henning will be back once again with us to talk about Laurel Resources, and Alistair McLeod will join us to talk about the surging inflation and the dollar's debt trap. Until then, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
NV Gold Corporation, trading under NVX on the TSX and NVGLF on the OTCQB, is a gold exploration company focused on uncovering the next multi-million ounce gold deposit in Nevada with an aggressive exploration season ahead in 2021, a tight share structure, strong management ownership, key strategic investors, a globally recognized technical team, report coverage from industry gold experts, and a strong treasury. Visit NVGoldCorp.com to learn more on this exciting story.